Is that some of your rock that flowed like a river? No. Balkan grinned at her. Rock that flows doesn't look like it afterwards. This is all sand rock, like that below in the canyon. All this time, the distant cliffs that Amberian and Follis were sure lay beyond the Cross Canyon drew closer. Pox could not believe that much of a canyon lay between them and the cliffs, until they reached the spire, and the rock fell away beneath their feet, a thin thread of trail angled back and forth down the rocks. Gerd's breath, Follis! We can't get the horses down there! Amberian took a few steps down the trail, stumbling on loose ledges of rock. It's as steep as a stair. Mules, mayhap, but the war horses... We can't leave them here. Follis looked around, frowning. Those Quaknom, or Inissen, or whatever, could come back, and you know the scroll mentioned dragons as well. Yes, but... Amberian slipped again, and the dislodged rock rattled down the trail several lengths before stopping. I'll scout ahead, said Thelen, pushing his way forward. This may not be the best way down. By the map, it's the only way down. Still, you're right. Take someone with you. He glanced at Pox, and she thought herself she should go, but her legs felt soft as custard. Amberian's gaze slid past her to one of the men-at-arms. Selium, you're hillbred, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
The man slipped by Pox, and together he and Thelen disappeared down the trail, quickly out of sight. Meanwhile, everyone dismounted and moved the sure-footed mules to the front of the line.
Though I'm not sure that's best, said Connaught. This way the horses can fall on the mules. Of course, they're as like to fall completely off the trail as down it.
In the end, it took the rest of that day to get everyone down to the bottom. They had only the one trail. Ardheel and Thelen might have been able to take another way, but no one else. They took everything that could be carried down by hand, climbing back up for load after load, and then led the mules down one at a time. The horses were last and worse. Pox was ready to curse their huge feet and thick heads by the time she had socks down beside the stream that flowed swiftly and noisily in the canyon. Here, at least, they had good water and plenty of wood. That night's camp, on an almost level bank some feet above the water, brought no surprises. Amberian and Ardheel both thought the Inissen had been left behind. Pox said little. She could not understand why she was so tired, when Amberian and the High Marshals had done their best to heal her. She had found the strength to work with the others, but it had taken all her will to do it. Nothing was easy, not even pulling the saddle off socks. The next day dawned clear again, and the two High Marshals began looking for the clues in Luop's notes. Pox forced herself to rise when they did, managed to smile in greeting, and almost convinced herself that nothing was wrong. Others were groaning good-humoredly about their stiff joints. She had nothing worse than that. She brought deadwood for the fires, and thought of washing her hair and bathing. Thelen reported a bath-sized pool, only a few minutes' walk downstream, already sunlit. But when she stripped and stepped into the pool, the cold water on her scars seemed to strike to the bone. She shuddered, seeing the scars darken almost to blue against her pale skin. She felt suddenly weak. The current shoved her against the downstream rocks. They rasped her nerves, as if she had no skin at all. She crawled out, gasping and furious. What would the others think, if she couldn't take a cleansing dip like anyone else? Her vision blurred, and she fought her way into her clothes. Let them think what they liked. She shook her head. No one had said anything. Maybe they wouldn't. She felt an obscure threat in her anger, in everything. By the time she climbed back to the camp, she could hardly breathe. Her chest hurt. But Amberian had gone with the High Marshals, and no one spoke to her. Pox crouched by the fire, worried but determined not to call attention to herself. They had enough other problems. When the scouting party came back, jubilant, having found the mysterious Needle's Eye of Rock, through which the detailed map of the stronghold could be seen, she was much better. She ate with the rest of them, and that afternoon they all prepared for the next day's journey. That night, Pox slept better, and woke convinced that nothing but fatigue was wrong. She was even able to saddle socks without great effort. They started on their way soon after daybreak. Very shortly, they came to a side canyon, emptying into the main one at almost right angles. They turned up this, clambering over and around great boulders until the horses could go no further. Here there was a glade, and a deep pool of water. Connaught left Sir Malak in command of half the men-at-arms, the other two knights and the yeoman, and told them to keep the animals out of the main canyon.
The scrolls mention a dragon, and I've never seen country that looks more like it should have a dragon in it. But in this narrow cleft, you should be safe. Gerd's grace on you. If we are successful, we can open a closer entrance from inside. Wait for us at least 10 days before giving up.
The rest of them made their way around the pool and began climbing the rock on the far side. It seemed to Pox like a great stair, each step perhaps ankle high and an arm deep, but with the treads tilted downward. She looked up and gasped, forgetting her pain and exhaustion. There, far overhead, a great red stone arch hung in the air, spanning the distance from one massive stone buttress to another. Behind her, she heard Balkan mutter in Dwarvish. Everyone stopped for a moment in amazement. Connaught called back to the yeoman below, and Pox saw them come around the pool and look up.
"I see it!" shouted one. "By the High Lord, that's a wonder indeed!"
They kept climbing. The stone slope, roughly shaped into tilted stairs, curved below and under the arch. Connaught led them toward the nearer, southern end of it. As they neared the vertical buttress walls, it was clear that someone had shaped the natural stone, flattening the increasing tilt of the treads. They reached the vertical cliff and moved along it. Now the stairs were hewn clean, like any stone stair, except for the crescent of Gerd chipped into the rise of every other one, alternating with an ornate L. The stairs steepened. Pox fought for breath. Her chest burned, and her eyes seemed darkened. She nearly bumped into Amberian in front of her when he stopped.
"Now, we'll see if we have understood the message," said Connaught. "This should be a door, if I can open it."
Pox could not see, from her position many steps down, what he did. But suddenly those in front of her moved, and she climbed wearily to a last small platform before an opening in the rock. Inside she saw with a pang of dismay that the steps continued. Even steeper, they spiraled up into darkness. Light flared above her. It must be Amberian lighting the way. Pox bit her lip and started up. When she reached a level again, her legs were quivering. The stairs had come out in daylight, on top of the cliffs. Amberian touched her shoulder.
"Are you all right, Pox?"
"I'm tired," she admitted, hating that weakness. "I shouldn't be, but..."
"It's all right," he said. "Let me try to help."
Pox did not miss the looks the men-at-arms shot her as Amberian's hand touched her head, but the warmth of that touch and the strength she felt dimmed her embarrassment for a time. They had come out on the clifftops. From below, Pox would have thought that the top of the mountain, but now she could see another lower row of cliffs and a rounded summit, heavily forested. A trail led south, along the edge of the cliffs. Thelen reported that it ended at a small outpost, a simple rock shelter carved into the stone. Another led west, toward the forested heights, but the main trail led north, out onto the rock bridge that they had seen from below. Pox felt her stomach heave at the thought. Others, she saw, had faces as pale as hers felt.
"Are we going out on that?"
asked one of the men-at-arms.
"We must," said Connaught. "It is the only way to Luop's stronghold." "And where is the stronghold?"
asked the man, looking around that wilderness of great rocks in confusion.
"There."
Connaught pointed to the opposite buttress, inside that mountain.
"I give them praise," said Balkan suddenly.
Pox looked back to see his eyes gleaming.
"That is a worthy stone. Such a place would suit our tribe."
Despite her fears, when they walked out on the stone arch, it was not bad. Wind was the worst problem, whipping past their ears from the southern desert and moaning in the great pines below. But once on the bridge, they could not see below. It was too wide for that. It seemed, in fact, wide enough to drive a team on. They were almost at the far side when they were faced with a huge man in shining mail who held a mace across his body. They stopped short.
"Declare yourselves," said a strong voice. "In whose name do you invade this place?"
"In the name of Gerd and the High Lord," answered Connaught.
The figure bowed and stepped aside. As Connaught's foot touched the stone beyond the arch, it vanished as suddenly as it had come. Pox felt a cold shiver all the way down her back. On the far side, the trail was clear, a nearly level groove in the stone leading east along the buttress to its eastern end. From here, they could see far to the north, to distant red rock walls, and that irregular gray mountain that Balkan insisted was fireborn. Eastward, a still higher plateau broke suddenly into the maze of canyons they had wandered. On the very point of the buttress, another guard post carved into the rock gave a clear view. The way into Luop's stronghold was a circle carved in the rock, with Gerd's crescent and Luop's L intertwined in its center. When High Marshal Connet stood there and called on Gerd, the stone seemed to melt into mist, revealing a stone stair. They clambered down, with sunlight pouring in the well. Pox could not tell how far the steps went down. They seemed to spiral slowly, after the first straight flight, around an open core where the light fell. Finally, they ended in a square hall with four arched entrances leading from it. Over each was a symbol, lit by its own fire. Gerd's crescent, the High Lord's circle, a hammer, and a harp. Through each, a passage could be seen, but nothing else. In the center of the hall, a circular well opened to the depths. They stood a moment, bemused by the designs, then, without a word, moved slowly toward one or another of the arches. Pock saw Balkan strut through the one under the hammer, and Ardheel stepped under the harp. She and most of the others stepped under Gerd's crescent. They entered a hall, as large as the High Lord's Hall at Finn Pinir, its great stone columns carved on the living rock. Gentle light lay over it without a source that Pox could see. The floor was bare polished stone, the same red as the rest, except for a wide aisle where some polished white and black slabs had been set in, forming a pattern that Pox found compelling but confusing. Far up, at the other end, rows of kneeling figures, robed in blue, faced a shallow platform. Pox looked around at the others and met Balkan's surprised gaze. Beyond him was Ardheel.
"I did not come with you," murmured Balkan. "I went under the hammer and saw great wonders of stone, and yet am here. This has the maker of worlds shaped well."
Pox nodded, speechless. She had not thought she would like being so far underground, with the whole mountain's weight above her. But she could feel no fear. The hall seemed to cherish them, protect them. Pox could not even feel the ache along her bones that was becoming familiar. The two High Marshals walked slowly up the aisle. The rest of the party followed. As they neared the rows of kneeling figures, Pox was suddenly seized by fear. Would they turn and attack? But they did not move. She could not see even the gentle movement of breath, and then feared they were dead. Ahead, High Marshal Connet turned to look into the faces of the rearmost row. He said nothing, and passed on. The silence pressed on them. It reminded Pox of the silence of the Elfane Teig, but it had a different flavor, at once more familiar and more majestic. When she reached the platform with the others and turned to look, she saw rows of faces, perhaps 100 in all, that seemed to be in peaceful sleep. Each held a weapon, most of them swords, point down, with hands resting on the hilts. Pox shivered. She saw the men-at-arms eyeing the figures, and then one another.
"Gerd's grace, and the High Lord's power rest on this place of peace," said Connet softly.
The words sank into the silence. And then, as if a drop of dye had fallen into clear water, the silence took on another flavor and shifted, pulling away from them to drape itself around the sleepers, protecting their rest, while leaving the company free to talk. It was as if a king's attention had passed to someone else, setting the pages free to whisper along the walls of the chamber.
"Well," said High Marshal Fallas, with a little shake of his shoulders, "I never expected to find this sort of thing."
"No."
Connet had stepped onto the platform.
"Look at this, Fallas."
The platform was itself stone, apparently all one great slab of white stone, and into the upper surface a brilliant mosaic was set, unlike anything Pox had seen.
"I wonder where he found someone to do this."
He turned to Pox.
"You were at Sibylle, weren't you? Didn't they have work like this?"
Pox shook her head. "Sir Marshal, I don't remember. I had a knock on the head and don't remember anything. But, let me think. Someone in our company mentioned pictures made of chips of stone."
Yes, I thought so. Along the coast of Arrhenius, they do this work. I've heard that it was used a lot in Old Air.
It could have come from Caliphet, said Amberian. I've seen bronze and copper ware from there, ornamented with bits of colored stone. Perhaps they do stone mosaics as well.
It might be.
Connet walked slowly from one end of the platform to the other, looking at the design. It spread from a many-pointed star in shades of blue and green to an intricate interlacement of curves and angles in reds and golds.
I would like to know what it is.
It is a place of power,
said Ardheel suddenly. They all looked at him.
I feel power in all this, said Amberian, but what do you mean?
Ardheel nodded toward the pattern.
That is a pattern of power. This place is made of many such. That,
he pointed to the black and white of the isle,
is another of them.
What do they do? Asked Follis.
Ardheel smiled, a quick flash of delight.
Ah, you men, you hear that I am saying more than elves are wont to say, and you hope to learn great secrets. So listen closely, and I will say what I can in common, and in elven for those who can hear.
He threw Pox a smile at that.
This place is sustained by patterns of power, else those sleepers would have died long since, and the dust of time hath filled this chamber. How was it we each saw and followed the symbol of our lord? Master Balkan, I dare say, saw and followed the dwarf's secret symbols, and was met and welcomed as a dwarf, just as I saw and followed the singer's sign, and was met and welcomed as an elf. Is it not so?
It happened, said Balkan.
Yes, then together we found ourselves in this hall, a pattern of great power. I think more than men had the shaping of it.
But, began Follis, and the elf waved his hand for silence.
I will be as brief as the matter allows, Sir Marshal. In haste is great danger. The right use of power requires full knowledge. This pattern, on the platform, is much like one placed in every elfane teg, in the center of every elven home kingdom. I do not know if I can explain how, and I know to you that means much. We elves, we think that as the singer sang, and we are both songs and singers ourselves, we both are and make the singer's patterns. So our powers grow from the patterns of our song. We do not enjoy putting these aside, outside us.
Pox could tell. He was having a hard time saying what he meant in common. For once, an elf's speech seemed halting and out of rhythm.
You mean, as men do in machines?
Asked Amberian.
Ardheel nodded.
Exactly. We are the power, as you paladins are, and I know what you will say, that it is the High Lord's, and he but lends it. That is also so of us, though we are given more.
He faltered, waving his hand.
We can choose more for ourselves, how to use it, he said finally. But on occasion we have used built things, patterns of stone or wood, or growing things, to make patterns of power that any elf can use, even if he lacks a certain gift.
At the Elfane Teg, Pox spoke without intention, and Ardheel looked at her sharply. The stone's carving, if I looked at it, it held me.
Yes. Instead of having some always on guard, elves have used such to bemuse and slow an enemy. This pattern, though, is used for other things.
He seemed reluctant to go on, but finally sighed and continued.
I might as well tell you, since it is clear that men used it before. With such a pattern, it is possible for a small group to travel a great distance all at once.
What?
Ardheel nodded again.
Look here and here. You will see that each of the high gods and patrons is included by symbol. This pattern draws on all their power and can be used by a worshipper of any of these, elf, dwarf, gnome, those who follow the High Lord, Alianya, or Gerd, Fok, Camwin, and so on.
But how do you know where you'll go? Asked Follis.
I am not sure. If it were exactly the same as the elven pattern, you would go where you willed to go, you would picture that in your mind, and that you would see, and that is where you would go. It would be possible, however, to set such a pattern for a single destination.
And to set it off?
An invocation of some kind, I do not know. Perhaps you will find guidance somewhere else in this place.
Ardhil was reverting to the more usual, enigmatic, elven reticence.
In that case, I think we can wait. Perhaps we will find some guidance elsewhere.
Follis gestured to a narrow archway leading out of the hall behind the platform.
Perhaps we should take a look.
The group followed the High Marshals across the platform. Pox noticed that they skirted the pattern gingerly, and through the arch into another stone passage, well lit by the same sourceless light. At intervals, they passed arched doorways into rooms hollowed from the stone. Most were empty, but one chamber, when they came to it, was very different. A desk and two tables were littered with scraps of parchment and scrolls. Shelves along the walls held neatly racked scroll cases as well as sewn books. A brilliantly colored carpet on the floor showed the wear of feet, but no touch of moth. A hooded blue robe hung from a hook, and a pair of worn slippers, the fleece lining worn into little lumps, lay under a carved wooden chair, just where the wearer must have slipped them off to put on boots. Connacht touched them with a respectful finger.
These must be his. Luops, or his successors, Gerd's Grace. I can hardly believe it.
He might have stepped out only moments ago, said Follis softly. There's no dust, no disarray. He glanced at the loose sheets on the work table. Look, Connacht. Supply lists, names. And here's a watch schedule of some kind. South outpost, east outpost, north.
I wonder what happened, murmured Amberian. I feel no evil here at all, only great peace and good, but some sleep, and others are gone.
Connacht sighed. Amberian, we wouldn't know if Falk himself slept out there with the others. Who knows what he looked like? The legends say he was thinner than Gerd, and none of us ever saw Gerd. I don't suppose, he said, turning to Ardhil, that you happen to be of an age to know what Falk looked like.
Ardhil shook his head. Sir Marshal, I am sorry that this is not a mystery I can solve for you. Only I agree with Sir Amberian that this is not a place of evil. Whatever happened here happened for good.
So, now what? Asked Follis. I feel strange rooting around in these things that seem untouched. If it were a ruin, and everything half destroyed. But here, I feel like a robber, almost.
We asked Gerd's Grace, and the High Lord's power, Follis. They know our need and the needs of this place. We will be warned, I dare say, if we trespass where they do not wish us to go.
Follis nodded. Connacht turned to the others. Amberian, if you don't mind, you might lead a group looking for a lower entrance. They must have had a way to get animals in and out and heavy loads.
With all the magic this place holds, said Amberian dryly, perhaps they simply wished them inside.
Connacht chuckled, then sobered abruptly.
By Gerd, Amberian, I hope you're wrong.
Before Amberian got out of hearing, however, Follis had found a map of the complex in the wide desk drawer. They called Amberian back.
Look, this is the main hall.
And this is Luop's office, as we thought, so that corridor, if we'd gone on, would lead to the kitchens.
I wonder what they do for fire draft so far down, said Follis. Master Balkan, do dwarves have any trouble with that?
Fire breath?
No. It is important to make a hole for it, that is all.
Look at these red lines, Amberian. Could that be shafts?
It could be anything until we go and look. Let me... Ah, look here. Is there another sheet?
Yes, two more. I put them on the table there.
Good. Let me see. Yes, look at this. I thought so. This keys to the other sheet, and this must be the ground level. If his mapmaker followed Finthin tradition, then this sign means a spring.
But we saw springs coming out of the rock very high, said Connacht.
Yes, but look. Isn't that a trail sign? And it's twisting here, as in natural land, not straight or gently curved, like these corridors.
Pox, looking over their shoulders, could make little of the brown, red, and black lines on the maps. She'd found the hall easily enough, and Luop's study, but the maze of corridors and the strange marks that Amberian insisted meant ramps or stairs confused her.
"I only hope," Phallus was saying, "that your trail isn't like that rock climb we had."
Amberian laughed. "No, I'm sure it's not. We'll go down that way and see. How many would you like left with you?"
"Who has a good writing hand?" asked Connet. "We should make copies of what we find."
Pox and one of the men-at-arms, who was known to write clearly, stayed with the High Marshals. Pox heard later that day how Amberian had led the little group through echoing passages of stone, ever deeper, down gentle ramps. They had found a stone stable, clean but for a few ancient bits of straw, and the deep-grooved ruts of the carts that had carried in fodder and carried out dung. They had found great kitchens, three of them, and Balkan had told them why, that whatever way the wind blew, one of the hearths would draw perfectly. They had found storerooms, still full of casks and bales, but across the doors lay a line of silvery light that Amberian would not try to pass. And finally, when the last wide corridor ended in a blank face of stone, Amberian had touched it with one glowing finger, and the stone vanished in a colored mist. The cold, pine-scented air of the canyon blew in, swirling a little dust around their feet. Some of the men were reluctant to go out, fearing the passage would close again, but it stayed open, like a great grange door behind them. Pox spent that time copying what seemed to her a very dull list of names. She supposed that the High Marshals had some reason to need a complete list of Luop's followers, with the years of their coming, but she could not understand it. Behind her, she could hear them at the shelves, gently taking down one scroll or book after another, and murmuring to each other. She used up the small amount of ink that Phallus had had, and asked him for his inkstick. He reached over to Luop's desk, where a bowl of ink sat waiting, as it seemed, and handed it to her.
"Use this?" Pox asked.
"Why not?" He hardly looked at her, face deep in a large volume bound in cedar wood.
"But it might be..."
"It's just ink, Poxenarian. What else could it be?"
Pox felt her shoulders tighten at the sneer she thought she heard in his voice and ducked her head. How did he know it was just ink? Ink doesn't stay wet for years. All the years this place had been... whatever it had been. She stabbed at the ink with a pen, and felt vindicated when it clicked on the surface. "It won't write," she said. "It's dried up."
"Oh?"
Phallus put the book down, picked up the bowl and tilted it.
"That's odd. It looked wet. And I'd have sworn it shifted. Well, here's the inkstick, and yes, here's a bowl for it."
Silently, Pox mixed a measure of ink with water from her flask. She pushed it over so that Elam could use it too. Amberian reappeared to say that he had found the lower entrance and had started moving the animals and others toward it. "It's nearly dark, though, so I thought it better to camp for the night. That trail is barely passable in daylight. Will you come out, or shall I have food sent in?"
"We'll come out," said Connet. "Everyone needs to hear all about this, and we should be together."
"I thought you might want to set sentries on the old guard posts." Connet shook his head.
"Until we know more about how this place works, that would simply call attention to us. Pox, Elam, that will do for today. Let's go have some supper."
And Pox, rising from her seat, realized how stiff and hungry she was. She followed the others out without a word. In the next 2 days, some of the party explored as much of the old fortress as the light would allow. One rash yeoman tried to pass a doorway barred with silver light and fell without a cry. Amberian touched his head and did nothing more. "He'll wake with a headache and more respect for these things. Someone stay with him until he wakes." Pox spent her time copying records. She wished she could roam around, seeing the things others spoke of in the evenings. It didn't seem fair that she had to act as scribe all the time. But no one had asked her what she wanted to do, and she refused to bring it up. Surely they could tell if they thought about it, she thought bitterly. Finally, when one of the yeomen was describing a long climb up a narrow corridor to an outlook on the very top of the mountain among the trees, Pox exploded.
"And you could see so far," the man said, gesturing. "North of here and west, what a view!
Of course it was cold up there, and after climbing all that way my legs quivered like jelly.
He grinned at Pox.
You're lucky, lady, that you get to sit all day in the warm, just wiggling your fingers with a pen.
Lucky? Heads turned at the bite in her voice. Lucky to sit all day? I'd give anything to be where I could see something besides another stinking scroll. How would you like to travel all the way out here and then be stuck in a windowless room? I've already been underground as much as I care to...
She stopped short. Seeing the worry in Amberian's face, the High Marshal's stern expressions.
You could have asked, Pox, said Follis mildly. We thought it would be easier for you with your wound still healing than climbing all over.
I'm sorry, she muttered. Now that she'd said it, she felt ashamed, and still somehow resentful. She shouldn't have protested. She shouldn't have felt that way, yet she did, and it was unfair.
Take some time tomorrow, Amberian said. I'll show you some things if you wish.
But Pox felt that he was humoring her, as if she were still sick. When she tried to follow Amberian around the stronghold the next day, she found that in one thing the High Marshals were right. She was too weak to climb far. She pushed herself, determined not to show what she felt, but when Amberian turned back toward the lower levels near midday, she was glad. That afternoon, she copied lists without complaint, and that evening the High Marshals announced their decision to try to use the pattern on the hall's platform.
We won't take everyone. Enough must stay here to go back as planned. The maps show another way out this canyon, down through the western cliffs, and a clear trail to the trade route from Caliphate. We suggest that, instead of the trail that would take you past the Quaknom again. But if the transfer works, we will return and the rest of you can travel easily that way. Wait 10 days for us to return before you leave. Ardhil assures me that if we can use the pattern at all, we can return in that time.
Pox was elated to find that they wanted her to try the pattern with them. High Marshal Connet, commander of the expedition, was staying behind. Those returning were Amberian, High Marshal Follis, Ardhil, Balkan, and herself. With Connet watching, they mounted the platform, standing as near the center as they could. Pox watched Balkan. He had confided to her that if he was to travel like this, he might as well go home if he could. Then the High Marshals together lifted their voices, calling on Gerd and the High Lord. Ardhil's silvery elven song joined them, then Balkan's chant in Dwarvish. Pox thought she heard a faint and distant call of trumpets.
Chapter 28.
As the Hall of Luop's stronghold faded around them, the sound of trumpets seemed to come nearer. Abruptly, they were standing on the lower dais of the High Lord's Hall at Finn Pinir, facing the Marshal General as she came forward between the ranks of knights. The fanfare had just ended. The Marshal General stopped in mid-stride, her face a stiff mask. Behind her, the knights drew sword. Others burst into shouts, questions, even one scream, chopped off short. The Marshal General's arm came up, paused. The hubbub stilled. No one moved. Then Amberian spoke, a formal greeting that Pox hardly noticed, because she'd realized that Balkan was not with them, and grinned to herself. She had no doubt that he had chosen to return to the Golden Axe, and hoped his magic worked. In moments, the Marshal General had reached the dais, touching each of them, eyes bright, and again the hall was full of sound. Greetings, whispers, comments, the scrape of feet, the rasp of weapons returned to scabbard and rack. To Pox, it seemed noisy as a windstorm after the calm of Luop's stronghold. She felt at once submerged in it and remote, a solitary stone washed by contending waves. Eventually the noise receded, the crowds dispersed, and she went to her quarters, hardly noticing the shy greetings and questions of those few students who spoke to her. A few hours later, the Marshal General summoned her. When she arrived in the study, she found the Marshal General and Amberian waiting.
I have been telling the Marshal General, began Amberian, about your capture and ordeal with the Ainissan, the Quaknom, he said quickly, after a glance at the Marshal General.
Pox nodded, at once alarmed and defensive.
I wondered what your plans were, Pox Anarian, said the Marshal General. From what Amberian says and the way you look, it seems that you may need a rest. Such wounds would slow anyone. Have you thought of it?
No, Marshal General. I did not know if... I mean, I am tired, yes, but I don't know about rest.
Do you mean you want me to leave?
No, not that. Amberian thinks you are not fit for a full schedule of training. He thought several weeks of rest would help. There are many things you could do here without much strain or...
I know what I would like, said Pock suddenly, interrupting. I could go home, visit my family in Three Furs. It's been 4 years and more.
As she spoke, the longing to go home intensified, as if she had wanted this all along.
Amberian frowned.
I don't think that's a good idea, he said slowly.
Why not? Pox turned to him, annoyed. It's not that far by the maps. I'm surely strong enough to ride that far, and there's no war, and...
Poxenarian, no.
It's too dangerous, as things are with you, and...
Pox felt a wave of rage swamp her mind. She was not weak, just tired from the fighting and the trip.
They kept trying to make her believe something was wrong. There's nothing wrong with me, she snapped.
By Gerd, just because I'm tired, and you said anyone might be, you think I can't ride a few days to see my family? I traveled safely alone on foot, with no training at all, 4 years ago. Why do you think I can't do it now? You keep trying to convince me something's wrong, and whatever it is, it's not wrong with me.
She glared at them, breathing hard.
It's not.
The Marshal General's voice was quiet, but hard as stone.
Nothing wrong. When a paladin candidate feels and shows such anger to the Marshal General of Gerd?
Nothing wrong, when you have not thought what such a visit could do to your family?
My family? What about them?
Pox was still angry. She could not seem to fight it back.
Poxenarian, you have attracted the notice of great evil, of Akria herself. Do you think you can travel in the world, anywhere in the world, without evil knowing? Do you think your family will be safe if you show Akria where they live, and that you still care for them?
Gerd's grace, Poxenarian, be on your mind that you think clearly.
Pox sat back, stunned. She had not thought. She shook her head.
All I thought was...
All you thought was what you wanted to do.
Yes.
And you resented any balk at all.
Yes.
Pox stared at the tabletop. It blurred as her eyes filled.
I thought it was over.
What?
The anger. Amberian can tell you. I thought it was past, that I had beaten it.
Pox heard the rustle of clothing as the Marshal General moved in her seat. She heard Amberian clear his throat before beginning.
Immediately after we got her out, she had a... I don't quite know how to describe it. Fallas and I thought we should let her memories return naturally, at least until Ardhil awoke. But Balkan, the dwarf, you recall, he disagreed and began telling her some of it. Anyway, I stepped in and interrupted, and Poxenarian became angry. Very angry. I thought at the time it was the pain of her wounds and attempted a healing.
It did help, said Pox softly, trying not to cry. It eased them, and then I could see I was wrong. But whatever it was recurred. A couple of times, in the next days, nothing bad. If it had been someone else, someone more irritable to start with. But it was not like Poxenarian, not the Poxenarian we knew. We spoke to her of it, and made allowances for the wounds, which Ardhil said had been healed so far by some Quaknam magic, and she seemed to have recovered, but for the weakness and exhaustion I spoke of to you.
I see.
The Marshal General was silent a long moment, and Pox waited, as for a blow.
Poxenarian, what do you yourself think of this anger? Is it just the wounds? It's not uncommon for people to be irritable when recovering from illness or wounds.
I don't know. I don't feel different, except for being tired. But if Amberian says I am, then...
She shook her head.
I don't know. In the Duke's company, I didn't get in trouble for fighting or anything like that, but I did get angry. I can't tell that it's any more now than it was then.
Our fear, said Amberian, was that the type of fighting she did
with the Ainissen, the Quaknam, would open a channel for a Kriya's evil.
I would hate to think so, said the Marshal General. I would hate that indeed. Poxenarian?
I don't feel that, Marshal General, truly I don't, and I care for Gerd, and for his cause as much as ever I did. The anger is wrong. To be angry at you, I mean, but I can control it another time.
Amberian, had you any other concern?
No.
He smiled at Pox. She has not begun beating horses, or cursing people, or telling lies. It's just an uneasiness. Ardhil feels the same.
Poxenarian, I hope you agree now that you should not travel to Three Firs.
Despite herself, Pox felt a twinge of irritation at this. She masked it with a nod and smile.
Good.
Take a few days to rest. Let our surgeons look you over. It may be that rest and good food will bring you back quickly. Don't start drill again until I've talked with you. We may want you to help instruct a beginner's class.
Pox left the Marshal General's office with mixed feelings. The thought of instructing was exciting. She could easily imagine herself with younger students, as she had worked with recruits in the Duke's company. But the prescribed days of rest were less attractive. Though tired and jaded, she was restless and could not relax.
I'm about to do a dangerous thing, said the Marshal General, pulling out a blank message scroll.
What?
Amberian watched her closely. I'm going to write Duke Phelan of Tsaya. Arianya trimmed her pen, dipped it, and began.
Phelan? Why?
I think you're right. I think this child is in serious trouble, and I think we don't know her well enough. Phelan commanded her for 3 years. He will know which way she's turned.
Then you sensed something, too?
Yes. Not much, as you said, but deep, and so rooted that it will grow, day by day, and consume her.
By the cudgel of Gerd, Amberian, this is a sad thing to see. She had so much promise.
Has still.
Maybe.
Right now, we must keep her from leaving, and from hurting anyone else. If she leaves us, she shook her head, the only thing standing between Akria and her soul is the fellowship of Gerd.
Ward her, Amberian.
I do, and I shall.
It was some days later that Pox came into the forecourt to find familiar colors there. 3 horses with saddle cloths of the familiar maroon and white, with a tiny fox head on the corners, and a pennant held by someone she had never seen before. She lingered, wondering if the Duke himself had come to Finn Pinnear and what for, but she had urgent business with the training master and had to go. Upstairs, in the Marshal General's office, she herself was the topic of conversation, if such it could be called. Duke Phelan faced the Marshal General across her polished desk, his eyes as cold as winter seawater.
And you want me to help you? You, who could not protect for even a year a warrior of such promise?
Arianya sighed.
We erred, my Lord Duke.
Terse guts you did, lady, not for the first time either. I thought I'd never be so wroth with you again as when my lady died from your foolishness, but this—
He turned away, and paced back and forth by the window, his cloak rustling, then came to lean on the desk again.
Lady, that child had such promise as I've rarely seen in 30 years of fighting. Your own paladin saw that in Arrhenius. You could not ask better will, better courage than hers. Oh, she made mistakes, aye, beginner's mistakes, and rarely twice, but generous in all ways, willing. We hated to lose her, but I thought she'd be better off in some noble service. She had a gentle heart for a fighter. I was glad to hear that she'd come here for training. She'll make a knight, and well-deserved, I thought. And then—
He glared at her.
My lord, we thought— began Amberian.
You thought.
The Duke leaped into speech. You never thought at all. Make her a paladin, you thought, and then you dragged her into such peril as even you, Sir Paladin, would fear, and without your powers to help her. You think me stained, Gerdsman, compared to your white company. But I know better than to put untrained, raw recruits into hot battle. 'Tis a wonder you have any paladins at all, if you throw them away so.
We don't, Duke Phelan, said Marshal Fallis. They do not go out untrained, but in her case, she did.
Do you even know how young she is? What What years you have wasted?
Duke,
began Follis angrily.
Be still, roared the Duke. I'll have my say. You asked me here for help, and you'll hear me out. I have no love for you these 14 years, Girdsman, though I honor Gerd himself. Protector of the innocent and helpless, you say? But where were you, and where was he, when my lady met her death, alone, and far from aid?
He turned away for a moment, then back.
But no matter. If I can help this girl, I will. She has deserved better of us all.
He looked around for a chair, and sat.
Now, you say she was captured, and is now alive but in some trouble. What is it?
My lord Duke, a paladin candidate can be assaulted in spirit by evil powers. That's why we normally keep them sequestered. We think that in defending herself during captivity, she became vulnerable to Akria's direct influence. This is the thought of Amberian and Follis, who observed her at the time they brought her out, and also of Ardhil the elf, who knows how Quaknam enchantments might work.
I see. Then you think she is now an agent of Akria?
No, not yet. Arianya met his eyes squarely. My lord, all we have noticed so far is irritability, unusual for her, for we have known her to be always good-natured, willing, and patient. It would hardly be noticed in another warrior. Indeed, many expect all fighters to be touchy of temper. The Duke grinned suddenly.
I am myself.
I noticed. But she has not been so since we've known her. You have known her longer. We thought you could tell us if she has changed.
You want me to tell you if she has become evil?
No. She has not become evil. Not largely. That I could certainly sense for myself. I want you, if you will, to speak to her, observe her, and tell us if she is changing in the wrong way, becoming more violent, less controlled. That is a sign of contamination.
And if she is, what then will you do?
The Marshal General paused long.
I am not sure. She is a member of our fellowship, and a paladin candidate. As such, she is under my command. As she is, she cannot be a paladin. You're sure?
Yes, I'm sorry, but so it is. What is of no account in another may be a serious flaw in a paladin. If she had gone over to Akria, it would be my duty to kill her.
No!
The Duke jumped to his feet. Please, sit down. She has not. I am not saying she has. I am saying if that were true, which is not true, yet. But if she is changing in that way, if the evil is growing, then, my Lord Duke, we cannot tolerate an agent of evil among us. We cannot. Somehow, before that happens, we must prevent it.
What can you do? Can you heal her, as you heal wounds?
Unfortunately not. Her wounds, indeed, have not yielded to our healing. The elf, as I said, says that this is because of some Quaknam magic used on them. As for her mind, I think that we might be able to destroy the focus of evil if, indeed, I'm not misnaming it, but like any surgery, it would leave scars of its own.
You speak of magic?
If you consider the gods' powers and magic in the same light, my lord, which I do not. The High Lord has given us, marshals and paladins both, certain powers. With them I might try to enter her mind and cleanse it. The Duke shifted in his seat.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all, Marshal General, and that's without any rancor for the past. It's bad enough that she had to bear such captivity and such wounds as you describe, that she had to have that filth trying to corrupt her mind. But then, to let someone else in, to stir the mess further.
Believe me, I don't like the idea either.
But what else is there? If we are right, and the evil is rooted there, and we do nothing, she will come to be such as even you, my lord, would admit must be destroyed.
Could anything, even death now, be worse than that dishonor?
No, but I dislike being the means of it. She was, I should say, my soldier. Under my command and protection, she has a right to expect more from me.
Now? Asked Follis.
Yes, now. By the gods, Marshal, I don't forget my soldiers when they leave. She served me well. I will not serve her ill.
My lord, one reason I wrote you
was that she had so often spoken of her respect for you. We are not looking for an accuser, my lord, but a friend who knew her in the past.
And do you think I will condemn her to you, having known her?
I trust you for that. You have always been, by all repute, an honest man, and so she thinks of you.
I will not persuade her to your opinions.
We don't ask that. Go. Talk to her, see for yourself. If you come and tell me I'm a fool, I will be best pleased by that. I don't think you will, but do your best for her. The Duke ran his hand through his hair.
I'll tell you what, Marshal General, you have set me a problem indeed, but you have won yourself. All right. I'll see her, but I think perhaps I'll have a new captain for my company out of it, and you'll be a paladin the less.
That may be so. Pox came from the training master's office in the black mood that had begun to seem familiar. She was not to ride out with the others to hunt the following day, and she was not to plan on taking part in the fall competitions. She lengthened her stride, hardly noticing when several students flattened themselves out of her way. At least, she was thinking, I can take socks out to the practice field. She turned hard right into the stable courtyard and nearly bumped into a tall man in a maroon cloak. Before he turned, she knew who it was.
My Lord Duke!
She fell back a step, suddenly happier.
Well, Pox, you've come far in the world.
He looked much the same, but he spoke now as if she were more his equal.
Well, my lord, I... They tell me that's your horse, the black.
Yes, my lord.
Will you ride with me? I'd like to see how the training grounds are laid out.
Certainly, my lord. Pox turned toward the tack room, but a groom was already leading Socks out, ready to ride. The horse had recovered his flesh, and showed no ill effects of the expedition. The Duke's own mount waited, and after they mounted, he rode beside her.
We were glad to hear, he began, that you'd been accepted here. I had 2 years with the Knights of Falk, and I understand that the training here is as good, if not better.
It's thorough, my lord, said Pox. He laughed.
Fortification, supply, field surgery?
Yes, my lord, and more.
Good. And you enjoyed it?
Oh, yes. Last winter was the happiest time of my life. She stopped suddenly and looked at him. I mean, my lord, after leaving the company.
Don't be silly, Pox. You weren't happy with us that last year. Few were. Of course you'd like this better. Now, what's that?
For some minutes, they rode in the training grounds, the Duke commenting and questioning on the equipment and methods of training that they observed. Then he turned to her again.
Did they teach you such riding here?
No, my lord. That was Marshal Sedfer in Brewersbridge, where I got my horse.
Brewersbridge? That's in Southeast Saya, isn't it?
Yes, my lord. Pox wondered if he would ask her about the details of her journey across the Dwarf Mounts, but he said nothing for a bit. Then,
what's this journey you've been on, that they talk of so? And they said you were captured by some kind of elf. Is that so?
Pox shivered, unwilling as always to remember that too clearly. Yes, my lord. It goes back, sir, to when I left your company. In the journey over the mountains, a traveling companion and I were enchanted by the Elfane Teig, and had to fight a demon-possessed elf underground.
By Tyr! And you lived?
Yes, my lord. And the Elfane Teig rewarded me with great riches, and gave me also a scroll. It seems that the scroll was written by Luop. It's very old, and contains much about Gerd and his times that was not known, for the scroll had been lost. It was in this scroll that the stronghold of Luop was mentioned, and map besides. So the Council of Marshals, and the Marshal General, declared a quest that search should be made for this stronghold, and the rumors of lost powers.
But why did you go? You were a paladin candidate, isn't that so?
Yes, but they asked if I wanted to. Because I'd brought the scrolls, you see. It was a reward, an honor.
I see.
They didn't know, my lord, that I would have such trouble.
No, but they might have thought.
He shook his head.
Well, enough of that. How did you come to be captured?
Pox told the tale as best she might, and the Duke looked grave, but listened without comment. When she finished with Ardhiel's treatment, he sighed.
Are you well, then?
I think so. They... Pox looked aside, but no one was near. My lord, They seem to think not, but I don't know why. I have lost my temper once or twice, even spoke sharply to the Marshal General.
That's nothing, said the Duke quickly. I've done as much.
Pox grinned, thinking of it. Then she sobered. My lord, I don't want to be bad. You know I never did. He nodded. I don't think I am, yet they don't trust me anymore. Just today the training master told me not to ride out hunting tomorrow, and not to join in the autumn competitions either. Is that fair? I haven't done anything. I've been careful. I do all they ask me. I don't know what more I can do. Her voice had risen. She took a deep breath and tried to continue more calmly. They say that evil begins as a little thing, too little for me to sense, that it will grow and consume me, until I become one of Akria's minions. But, sir, you know me. You've known me all along. Am I so bad? Phelan looked at her, a piercing gaze that she found it hard to meet. Then he shook his head slowly. Pox, I see you much as you were, a good soldier, loyal and courageous. You bear scars that I would not care to have, and you have suffered under both enchantments and blows. I do not see evil. Pox relaxed, but he went on. But Pox, I am no marshal or paladin to discern evil directly. The gods know I have no great love for the Granges of Gerd, but they are not evil. I think perhaps you should submit yourself to their judgment. My lord!
And if it is not fair, or if you do not agree, leave them. I will not forsake you. As you were my soldier, so you can be again. As I recall, you held the right to return when you left.
Pox said nothing,
and after a while they rode back silently.
She suspected that the Duke had come to Finn Paneer because of her, and this was confirmed when she answered a summons late that afternoon to the Marshal General's quarters. She was shown to a study she had not been in before, a level higher, with windows on three sides. Amberian, Follis, Ardhil, and Duke Phelan, as well as the Marshal General, were all in the room. The Marshal General began by explaining what they thought was wrong, and what she thought could be done about it, a sort of surgery of the mind.
Pox nodded gravely, trying to pay attention through a numb haze that fogged her mind. Arianya paused for that nod, then went on. So much we think we can do, but that is not the whole story. I want to be fair with you. We are sure that if you live, the evil will be destroyed, but some good may be destroyed as well.
What sort of good?
Asked Pox, her mouth drying with fear. Amberian looked away, at a tapestry on the outer wall. Arianya glanced down, then met Pox's eyes squarely. Pox Cenarion, the worst evils come from the degradation of good. In your case, those qualities you've worked so long to strengthen. You may not be a fighter afterwards.
Not a fighter?
Pox felt the blood leave her face. No. I will not lie to you. You may be weak, clumsy, uncertain. You may lose your will to fight, your courage.
No!
Pox clenched her fists, anguish twisting her face. I cannot, you cannot want me to be so.
Lady Poxenarian, said Ardhil, what we want is that you be healed and whole, and free of any taint of evil, but our powers are limited, and it is better to be free of the Dark One's web than be a prince under her control.
But,
Pox shook her head, but you ask that I give up the only gifts I have, chance them, and if I survive a weakling or a coward, what good is that? To you or anyone? My lady, she said to Arianya, the Granges would not let me in if I were a coward. I would be better dead, indeed. You say I am not so bad yet. If I cannot be a paladin, I can still fight your enemies. Then if I go wrong, then perform your treatment. Or kill me.
Arianya started to speak, but Duke Phelan interrupted.
Pox, when you were in my company, you learned that wounds must be treated at once, lest corruption begin. And if the surgeon cuts away good muscle, it's better than leaving the least infection to spread and engulf the whole body.
Yes, my lord, but
Poxenarian, the Duke speaks truly. If we thought the evil would not spread, or would spread but slowly, we would not try such a drastic cure. But it is the nature of such to spread with awesome speed. You yourself,
being damaged already by this poison, cannot perceive how far it has gone already.
But my lady, to lose all, and think how long I might live, what could I do? So long in disgrace.
It will not be disgrace, Poxenarian, however it turns out. You have already won honors beyond your years. Nor will any Grange of Gird be closed to you. That I promise. And if you have these troubles, and you might not, we will help you find another way to live.
Pox thrust back her chair and rose abruptly, striding to the window to stand braced against the embrasure, looking out at evening sunlight, yellow on the cobbled court, and the roof of the High Lord's Hall across the way.
"I always dreamed of being a warrior," she said softly.
"Silly. Childish dreams at first, of being the hero in old songs, with a silver sword. Then Jarnath told me about soldiering, and I was going to be a mercenary, a good one, and earn my living with my sword, and see strange lands, and win honor serving my lord. So I joined Duke Phelan's company, and prospered as well, I think, as any recruit. You've heard they thought well of me."
She glanced at the Duke, who nodded gravely, then turned back to the outside view.
"I stayed 3 seasons, but no fault of my Lord Duke, who's as fine a leader as I ever hoped to fight under, I saw things I didn't want to be part of. So I left, thinking I'd go north and home and join some castle guard. You know what happened with the Elfane Teig and near Brewer's Bridge. Marshal Sedfer, Master Oakhallow, they showed me fighting, but for cause, not for a person. My dreams grew. More than being a guard captain instead of a sergeant, I dreamed of fighting as Gird fought, for right, for the protection of the helpless. And you encouraged me, you, Marshal General, and you, Marshal Fallas, and you, Sir Ambirian. You said learn, learn languages, art of weaponry, supply and surgery, fortification. You said all these things were right.
Hox's voice broke, and her shoulder shook. The listeners were silent, each with his own memories, his own visions.
Pox took a deep breath, then another, and turned to face them, tears filling her eyes.
"And then you honored me, sheep farmer's daughter, poor commoner and ex-mercenary, beyond all dreams I dared. You, my lady, offered me the chance to become a paladin. A paladin! Do you... can you have any idea what a paladin means to a child on a sheep farm at the far edge of the kingdom? It is a tale of wonder, all stars and dreams, a fantasy, too good to be true. I had met paladins, and you said, come, be one of them, that is your destiny."
She stopped for breath again, then went on, looking from one to another as she spoke.
"I could not argue, my lady. I felt you must know. You wouldn't say it if it weren't true. I wondered and rejoiced, and then to go on quest with Ambirian and the others. I was glad to chance all dangers in such company, and all of you were most courteous to so young a warrior. You remember, Ambirian, that first attack? You said I did well then."
"Pox," he said, but she went on heedlessly.
"And then I was taken. No, my lords," she said as both Ambirian and Ardheel started to speak. "I blame you not. I said so before. The evil ones wanted me. It was my weakness or flaw that drew them to me. How could I blame you, who followed into the rocky heart of their lair to free me, outnumbered as you were? No. And while I was thus, in their hands, I tried to pray to Gird and the High Lord for aid, but I had to fight against their servants, lest they kill me. I was alone, in the dark. I thought that to fight so, Gird would approve. I thought that was right."
She looked down, suddenly, and shuddered.
"It wasn't easy."
Then she faced them again.
"Now you say that because I fought them, because I didn't just die, I have opened a passage for great evil. I can't feel this myself. I don't know. But to chance all I can do, to chance losing all I've learned, all I am, that you helped make me, and to think how long I must live if it goes badly, could such a one as I be a potter? Or a weaver? Oh, better to kill me, my lady, and quickly."
Silence followed her words. Pox turned again and stared blindly out the window.
Then Arianya took breath to speak, but Ardhil forestalled her.
Lady Poxenarian, elf friend, may I tell you a true tale?
Pox gazed at him, white-faced and desperate.
Yes, Ardhil, I will listen. We elves, m'lady, know not death from age, and thus our memories are long, and we see slow processes in the world as easily as you might see the start and finish of a meal. Once, long ago, before ever this hall was built, or men had found their way over the mountains from the south, I walked the green forests with an elf, known for the beauty of his voice and the delight of his songs. From him, I learned that very air I taught you, m'lady, when we first met. It was his craft to shape his instruments of living wood, a delicate business, to urge the growth of linden, or walnut, or mahogany, so that it grew fitly shaped for harp or lute or lowpipe, and to shape it so that in time the complete instrument could be separated from the tree without harm to it, or to the creature it grew from. Long years of growth and shaping were required for a single instrument, but long years we elves have in plenty, and delight in filling them with such work. In that time he was growing a harp, not a lap harp, as might be grown from any angle of applewood or pear, but a great harp, on which he hoped to play before the throne of our king. If you think of the shape of a great harp, you will realize how difficult this would be, for if the harp frame were strong enough to withstand the tension of the strings, removing it would cause severe damage to its tree. I cannot tell you how it was done. It is not my craft, but he caused a part of the tree, the part between the instrument and the main plant, to withdraw, as it were. This process must be complete when the instrument was grown, else it became gross and unmusical, and required shaping with tools, which he abhorred. But if it was begun too soon, the withdrawal weakened either instrument or tree, and could allow wood rot and other decay to attack both. It happened that he had just begun shaping his harp tree when our king determined to wed. Not immediately, for that is not our way, but the courtship and preparation began, and in 20 years or so, as humans would measure time, the wedding day was announced to all elf kind. It would be another 40 years, for the beauty of elf maidens does not fade or wither, and the king's subjects would have time to prepare all good gifts for the festival. When he heard this, my friend determined that his wedding gift would be the great harp he was then shaping, a kingly gift indeed. He brought me to see it growing. Though little I could see, he had to point out which twig would grow to take the fret, and which root sprout would form the shorter leg. The frame, you see, was to be grown all in one piece, trunk, branch, root, and sprout top grafted to the branch. In 20 years, I happened by again, and the shape was far clearer. But my friend was dissatisfied. By his craft, he knew that, as it grew, it would grow too slowly. It would not be ready for the king's wedding. I laughed, I recall, and reminded him that elves have no need of hurry. For such a royal gift, the king would be well content to wait. He laughed with me, and seemed reassured. But though elves are not by nature hasty folk, we are proud of our crafts, and love ceremony. And ceremony means things done fitly and in time, and by that love and desire that his gift might be the means of great pleasure at the wedding feast, he was betrayed into haste. I know not when he did it, or exactly what he did. He had ways of speeding and slowing the growth of all plants he worked with. Indeed, I've seen him grow a low pipe in but one season. If it cracked in 10 years, what matter? If it served the need to gift a dying man. But somehow, he tried to speed the growing of his harp, and the withdrawal of the parent tree, and out of this haste a flaw came into the wood. A part of the withdrawal moved into the harp wood, and weakened it. And the great post, that would have to bear the greater strain of the stringing, grew awry. I well remember the day he showed me, sorrowing, what had gone wrong. 50 years and more of work,
and a little space where the rot crept in had ruined it. To heal that and reshape the post would not only take time, years of time, but would also require that the weak part be burned out, regrafted with live wood, and supported while new growth took over. And, he said, 'twas more than likely that it would never grow true in shape, but be clumsy and crooked, even if strong enough. Yet to ignore the wood rot would doom the harp and the tree that bore it. I asked him what he would do. He looked at the tree a while and said, 'It is not the fault of the wood, which grew true to its nature. I will amend what I can and tune it as it will bear.' Lady Poxenarian, it is not through your failure that this trouble has come, but we who should have been wiser tried to rush your growth into that beauty we saw possible. Yet now, we cannot leave you to perish by our mistake. We must try to mend, though mending is not sure." Pox had watched his face as he told the tale, but found it as mysterious as all elven faces. It held surmise, but no answers.
"Sir, you have always been kind to me," she faltered. "But need it be now? Could I not go to the green fields just once to be a memory?"
"Lady, I have known you, I an elf, who will not die except in battle. You are in my memory, and the memory of my people, and there you will not fade in all the years to come when men may forget. We will make songs of you, lady, whatever happens."
"That's not what I meant," said Pox miserably.
"Poxenarian, we cannot force you to this," said Arianya. "It would be better to do it quickly, but we cannot and would not force you. But you cannot wander alone with this peril on you, nor, I think, should you be much abroad with others. Whatever you decide and whatever happens, it need not become common gossip."